Welcome to Stuck in the Frame, episode 17 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Alwigon. We all have a frame of reference through which we see the world. This frame dramatically affects the opinions we form and can make it difficult for us to see things any other way than through our frame. Today, we're going to explore that phenomenon, how it affects our relationships and contributes to creating and perpetuating conflict. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by William Constantine. Your reality is as you perceive it to be. So it is true that by altering this perception, we can alter our reality. You'll recall that in episode 14, I talked about reframing our perspective. Today, I'm going to talk about the frame itself. Each of us has frames of reference through which we see the world. These frames are built by our personality, our culture, what others teach us, our experiences and our assumptions, our beliefs, and our values. We have been building this frame since the earliest years of our life, sometimes consciously, more often unconsciously. Of course, there's nothing wrong with having frames of reference. They're perfectly normal and are a natural function which helps us to figure out how we want to navigate the world we live in. We make decisions about how we want to act, who we do or do not want to be around, our opinions about the world we live in and the people in it, what actions are acceptable or not, and what we consider to be good or bad and right or wrong, all based on our frames of reference. Our frames of reference give us a sense of security. They help us to feel as though there are fewer unknowns. They give us a sense, whether real or illusion, that we can predict how people will act or what will happen in certain situations based on what we believe we are seeing from our frames of reference. In many ways, this is highly functional. In other ways, not so much. The challenges come into play when a frame of reference is too narrow or rigid, causing us to misperceive or misjudge or be blind to what exists outside that frame of reference. When our frame of reference is too narrow or too rigid and we're unwilling to change or release that frame, it can damage our relationship to our world and the people in it. Here's an example of what I mean. Adolescents and young adults often make very unwise choices, acting in ways they later regret. When they regret those actions, they usually evolve into better ways of showing up in the world. But sometimes, the people who were negatively impacted by their bad choices and regrettable actions are resistant to seeing them as they are now and keep them stuck in a frame of reference of who they were in the past. I'm guessing that as you're listening, many of you are relating to what I'm saying. Either as the person keeping someone stuck in your frame of reference that for some reason you haven't let go of, or as a person stuck in someone else's frame, one in which you do not fit. I'll tell you something about myself, which people who see me now have a very hard time believing. I was a very angry teenager. In fact, I was a rager. I felt my anger so strongly, it became a powerful frame of reference through which I saw the world. I didn't know what to do with all that anger that I carried, and I vented it freely. I treated my siblings and my mother badly when I raged. During my rages, I didn't see them for who they were. In the frame of reference of my rage, I sometimes blamed them for my rage, and other times I saw them simply as targets, a place to discharge all that overwhelming emotion, not as my family members whom I loved and who loved me. That's one example of how our frame of reference can blind us to what lies outside the frame. Of course, that's not who I am today. When I think now about how I treated them all those decades ago, my heart hurts and I get tears in my eyes. My remorse is so great. In the decades since I acted that way, I became a different person. I grew wiser, I learned how to understand and process my emotions, and I released the raging frame of reference through which I saw the world. Who I am today is someone dedicated to embodying peace and co-creating peace in the world. However, in order for my family and I to heal our relationship, that was not enough. My family had to be willing to release their frames of reference in which they saw me as a rager, someone to be feared and avoided. They needed to see me for who I am now, not as who I was, in order for us to build new kinds of relationships with each other. Fortunately, they did. One of my biggest gratitudes in this life, and I have many, is that my family and I see and embrace each other for who we are, and we celebrate that. Many people are not so fortunate. Many people are stuck in someone else's narrow, rigid frame of reference in which they are not seen for who they really are and for all that they have to offer as beings. Many people are anchored to a frame of reference that blinds them to other perspectives and realities. Such a tragedy. In case you haven't already recognized it, this is where grudges come from, and in my perspective, constitutes the structure of bias and prejudice as well. How are these frames built? Well, as I mentioned earlier, our personality, our culture, what others teach us, our experiences, our assumptions, our beliefs, and our values all play a role in building our frames of reference. A person who has an extroverted personality will likely have the frame of reference that other people are interesting and fun to be around, engage with, and get energy from, and that being alone is nowhere near as enjoyable as being with other people. Conversely, someone who has an introverted personality may have the frame of reference that other people are uncomfortable to be around and intrusive, and that spending time alone is essential to recharging their energy. These are a couple of examples of how our personality can help build our frames of reference. The culture we are raised in will also strongly influence our frames of reference. Some cultures, which are focused on family, defining family as those who are related by blood or marriage, will have a frame of reference that people who are not part of the family unit are outsiders. Cultures which emphasize spirituality often have the frame of reference that people who share the same faith are family, and those who do not are outsiders, even if they're related by birth or marriage. Look at the culture you were raised in. How did it affect your frames of reference? Looking at other cultures, what frames of reference do you see that might emerge from those cultures? The things we are taught contribute to our frames of reference as well. Bias and prejudice are often taught by parents to their children. The things our parents teach us can become very rigid frames of reference for us, sometimes so deeply ingrained in us that we give them more credence than other lessons we learn in life, even those learned through our own personal experience. The conclusions we draw from the experiences we have in life are foundational components of our frames of reference. For example, if we have several bad relationships or just negative encounters with a certain kind of person or with people who share a particular trait or characteristic, we develop frames of reference based on assumptions which say that all similar people are bad. Do you see the relationship here to bias and prejudice? The actions of a few are attributed to all who are similar. We may feel very positive toward people who remind us of our favorite parent or someone else we're fond of. We might hate all people who remind us of our ex or someone else we don't like. Judgments of many based on the actions of a few. We see this happening so vividly and so tragically in the many officer-related killings of African-American people over the years. It appears that somewhere along the way, a frame of reference developed for some law enforcement officers that all African-American men are dangerous and must be dealt with violently. Some have acted on that frame of reference. Profound tragedy has occurred, and people have died, seemingly for no other reason than the color of their skin. As a result, many people have developed the frame of reference that all law enforcement officers are racist, excessively violent, and crazed with power. Consequently, some have been killed for no other reason than that they were wearing a uniform. One disproportionately narrow frame of reference giving birth to another. Violence begetting violence. Tragedy compounding tragedy. And we're seeing another consequence of fear-based frames of reference causing more human tragedy in the wave of hate crimes against people of Asian descent based on the belief that the coronavirus originated in China. What on earth does that have to do with any Asian person? Okay, maybe if it were true that some scientists in China created the coronavirus, which has yet to be proven, there might be valid reasons to have animosity toward those scientists. But there is no logical relationship between those scientists and all other people of Asian descent that justifies putting them all together in the same negative frame of reference, much less hating or harming them. Imagine the frustration and outright terror those who are trapped in those frames must feel. Imagine fearing for your very life simply because someone sees you in a frame of reference in which you do not belong, and from which they won't release you. This innate behavior of drawing all-encompassing conclusions from experience, observation, and fear-based theories originated as a learning process rooted in the part of our brain known as the primal brain, which is responsible for our survival and is more reactive than logical. It makes a rapid association between event and impact, draws a conclusion based on that impact, good or bad, then inserts that into a pattern of thinking and reaction that is applied to all future events of that kind and the people involved. While this was essential to our survival in more primitive times, this part of our brain has not evolved as rapidly as our species and environment have, and can influence our frames of reference, making them illogical and dysfunctionally narrow. When your primal brain is engaged, the part of your brain which is responsible for rational judgment, impulse control, reasoning, and problem solving is not engaged. Yes, there are many reasons that we have frames of reference, and many things that influence those frames, the vigor with which we hold on to those frames, and our unwillingness to release others from the frames in which we see them. I hope you have the wisdom and courage to be asking yourself how this applies to you. It applies to all of us, and I include myself in that. We all have our frames of references and our biases. Some which we're aware of, and some of which we are unconscious, some which serve us well, and others which do not. This is where mindfulness can play a key role. We have the ability, the opportunity, and the responsibility to mindfully and deeply examine our thinking, our frames of reference, and our beliefs. Here are some questions to consider asking yourself. What is my frame of reference about this person or situation? Do I really have the full picture? What am I not seeing? If I look at this from other frames of reference, could it look different? What are other frames of reference through which I might look at this? What do I see from those frames of reference? Do others see the same thing from their frame of reference? If so, does that influence me? Is that influence constructive or destructive? What role is my ego playing in my frame of reference? What's causing me to hold on so tightly to this frame of reference? What's preventing me from releasing someone from the frame I've locked them into? What harm is being caused by the rigidness of my frame and my attachment to it, or from keeping somebody trapped there? What benefits could there be if I tried a new frame of reference, or at least expanded my frame to include a larger picture? What healing might come from releasing someone from the frame of reference I have them trapped in? There are many questions you can ask yourself to gain insight into your frames of reference and whether or not they are of good service to you and others, and I invite and encourage you to do so. Have the courage to see where that takes you. It may be frightening, it may be painful, or at the very least, uncomfortable. You may have to wrestle with your ego. It will very likely not be an easy experience. Be okay with that. The reward could help you grow as a human being, heal deep wounds, restore lost relationships, prevent tragedy, and literally change your life, maybe even change someone else's life. As an example, people sometimes have judgments and grudges against their parents for things they believe their parents should have done differently. This is usually from the frame of reference of a child, even when a person is now an adult. We often have a difficult time seeing our parents as people, not just as our parent. When we broaden the frame of reference through which we see them into something broader than the parent-child frame, where we see them as someone more than just our parent, there is a wealth of insight, understanding, and wisdom to be found. I've read many letters to advice columnists from widowed or divorced parents who are in conflict with their children because their children, in many cases their adult children, don't want them to be in a new romantic relationship because that takes their parent out of the frame of reference that is familiar and comfortable. Here's one such letter. Dear advice columnist, I am 70 years old and have just moved to the U.S. from overseas after an unexpected divorce. It was my daughter's suggestion for me to move here. I bought a house 5 miles from my daughter's house. This is the first time in years that I've lived close to her and my 2 grandchildren. It's been a huge change for me, and I'm still getting used to things here. While I want to be here and involved in their lives, I also want a life of my own. Using a dating website, I met a woman. I wasn't sure whether to tell my daughter, but my daughter told me how she'd met a man on a dating site and they were planning to meet soon, so I figured I'd open up and tell her about my new friend. It seemed like she approved, or at least didn't disapprove. Then it came to my eldest grandson's birthday. I forgot his card and present, so I asked my new lady friend to bring them to my daughter's house for me. I went outside and got them from her when she arrived and gave her a quick kiss goodbye. I went in and gave the gift to my grandson, who was overjoyed with it. My daughter, on the other hand, was unhappy because she'd seen me kiss my lady friend goodbye. Now my daughter wants nothing to do with me anymore because she thinks I'm only thinking about myself. She feels that I'm selfish and don't care about her and the boys, which isn't true. I just want some life of my own along with being here to be close to them. This is a huge problem for me and I have no idea how to make it right. Signed, Dist by Daughter. This is a classic example of how parents are limited in the eyes of their children to only being mom and dad. It's understandably difficult for children to see their parents as people who need to replace the love and romance they lost when they became widowed or divorced. It's a much different and larger frame of reference. Children, including adult children, often have very small and rigid frames into which they try to lock their parents, consciously or unconsciously condemning them to a lifetime of loneliness if they get their way. Yet when the parent is released from that frame, or the frame of reference is expanded, the parent and child have the opportunity for a far deeper and more profound relationship that goes beyond, yet still includes, the parent-child relationship. Had that letter-seeking advice been sent to me, I would have encouraged him to invite his daughter to come over to his house for dinner, just the two of them, to have a deep conversation where they could explore their frames of reference about one another and their relationship and the expectations they have of one another. From there, they could negotiate agreements that could serve as a foundation for a relationship where they could see each other not only as father and daughter, but as fellow human beings and perhaps friends. I would suggest they use either the Blueprint of We process, which was discussed in last week's episode, or the Conscious Communication Framework I shared in Episode 2. Think about the people you might be holding a grudge against. Have you ever considered looking at them or the situation that caused your grudge from a different viewpoint, a different or broader frame of reference? Have you ever tried looking at what happened from what I call the neutral observer perspective, where you try to view it without any frame of reference or judgment, simply looking at it from an objective perspective? What might you see differently if you did? What might happen if you did? Perhaps there is someone in your life who has a grudge against you or has you stuck in some frame of reference where you don't feel you belong. Most of us have been there at some point in our life. It is so painful and frustrating. It can be humiliating and even frightening. You might have fought against that person and the frame they have you in, trying to get them to see you or the situation differently. In many families, there is long-standing conflict around this kind of situation. My observation is that the more we fight against the frame we feel trapped in, the tighter others hold on to it, and the more resistant they become to releasing us from that frame. Instead, try an invitational approach. Instead, try an invitational approach rather than an oppositional approach. In a peaceful and collaborative way, invite them to ask themselves the questions I invited you to ask yourself a few minutes ago. Don't pressure them or try to use the questions to show them how wrong they are. Simply create the space for them to expand their view and invite them into that space. Then allow them the time and opportunity to find their way to a new or expanded frame of reference. Here's an example of the power of releasing someone from a frame of reference in a different context. There's a conflict transformation process, which I told you a couple of stories about in episode 3 of this podcast, and which I'll be doing an episode about soon, called Restorative Justice. Restorative justice creates the opportunity in a safe and supportive structure for someone who has committed a crime or done harm to another person to take responsibility for their actions and the impacts of their actions and negotiate ways to repair the damage and restore a sense of well-being to the person or people harmed, and in so doing, restore their place in the community. I bring this up now because this is a beautiful example of releasing someone from a frame of reference when they demonstrate that they no longer belong there. In each of the examples I gave in episode 3, at least 2 lives were changed, that of the young man who had caused the harm, as well as those who had been harmed, because they were able to change their frames of reference about one another. Rather than seeing one another as victim and perpetrator, they were able to see each other as fellow human beings. In one of those situations, they developed a lifelong friendship with the man who was once the victim, becoming a mentor for the young man who had once done him harm. I hope today's episode has given you some insights about frames of reference, the roles that they have in conflict, and the power that expanding or changing our frames of reference and releasing the people whom we have locked in our frames will have in transforming our relationships and even our perspective of the world. I hope you are inspired to explore your frames of reference, to consider expanding or changing those which do not serve you and your relationships, and to release anyone you may have trapped in one of your frames. Doing so will be a major step in co-creating peace. I look forward to hearing from you with your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. I'm also happy to answer any questions you may have about anything I've shared with you. Let me know if you want me to send you that list of questions I invited you to ask yourself in this episode. All you have to do is email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON @bridgesofpeace.com. I will reply within 2 business days. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please let me know that too. I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. Join me next week when I'll talk about the role that roles play in conflict and its perpetuation. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.